Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, 15 hours and many time zones away is our friend Andrew Wittenberg, a reporter for KSL in Salt Lake City. He is live from Pyeongchang at the Olympics. Hey, Andrew, how are you this morning?
Hey, what's going on? We're missing the snow. You guys got all the snow in Chicago.
We got a ton of snow in Chicago. It's funny, as I've watched the first shots of the Olympics, the other day before the opening ceremonies, I saw some downhill skiing, and it looked like, from an aerial shot at first, that the slopes were full of snow and nothing else was full of snow. But then yesterday, as I was watching leading up to the games, it looked like there was snow on the mountains. What's the snow factor there right now?
Snow factor is this. It's an area that gets less than 100 inches of snow a year. So every bit of snow that you're seeing, mostly anyway, is man-made. Not like what we have out in Utah, for instance, which is, you know, we get a lot of the fresh powder, as they
sure.
say. They get about 98 inches of snow here a year, which, you know, is not a ton for a mountain town, a mountain area. And so they do man-made snow here. Snow guns everywhere on all the ski resorts. And it's great conditions, but it's just it's man-made.
When you say all the ski resorts there, were there ski resorts in South Korea before the idea of the Olympic Games? Did people regularly go skiing, or is that something that is just for this Olympics?
No, there are ski resorts here. It's just not like what you would see in, say, a Vail, Colorado, or Salt Lake, Park City, Utah. There's not the frequency of the resorts, you might say. There's a handful. The venue where most of the alpine events are taking place is called Yongpyeong Alpine Center, and it's actually the oldest ski resort in South Korea, and I believe it's something like 50 years old. So it's been around for a long time here, not just for the games, but yeah, again, man-made snow. And we actually got to go up skiing on Wednesday and get up there and see what it was like and meet with some of the USA ski team, the Team USA folks, and get a look at it and the conditions. And it's actually really nice. It was very, very bitterly cold. The wind is just oppressive and constant. But yeah, not too bad as far as it wasn't super icy like you might see in New England or something when it's bitterly cold like that. Mm-hmm.
I was reading a story, I think on Yahoo, that this is the coldest Olympic Winter Games since, I think, Lillehammer. They were saying that the cold is so bad that it's warping the skis, that a lot of these very expensive skis being used will be thrown away after they're used because the snow is crystallizing on the skis or something like that. Has that been a story out there?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we heard that in the first training sessions when it was so very cold, single digits, and the wind chill, again, just pretty oppressive, that the snow being man-made, when it gets hot, it doesn't really turn into water or like a slush. It just crystallizes, and it was actually cutting into some of the skis, and as people who follow any sort of competitive skiing or have actually even been skiing themselves know, you know, that the wax surface on the bottom of those skis is pretty crucial just for any skier, but certainly at a competitive level, it's crucial. And so, yeah, they were tossing some skis out as of their training runs. Now, it's warmed up a little bit now, so I don't think that's going to be a problem for the competition, which gets underway tomorrow. But, yeah, overall, they were having to toss some skis because it would just burn into the actual surface of the ski.
That's so fascinating. You think the Winter Olympics, it's cold and we have everything figured out, but I guess there's some things that are going to make a difference for these guys. Tell me about, so real quick, the time change. Is it 6 o'clock at night, 6:12 at night where, right now there?
It is right now. 6:12 p.m., yes,
okay.
On where are we, Saturday night now, yes.
So you are 15 hours ahead of us. And
yeah,
so,
correct. 15 hours ahead of Central Time.
So while we just watched the opening ceremonies here a few hours ago, that was an entire day ago that happened.
Yeah, about this time last night, I think they started at 8 o'clock p.m. local time on Friday night.
Okay.
So yeah, just almost 24 hours ago. So if they're on tape delay, they were on tape delay in the States, but they right. aired live across all time zones in the U.S., just the way that NBC hammered it out for these games.
Interesting. And did you attend the opening ceremonies, or where were you?
We did. We were outside of the stadium. We were doing live shots for our Friday morning show
okay.
On KSL there in Salt Lake, and it just so happened to coincide with the time that it was going on during the opening ceremonies, our morning show. And so we were doing live shots outside the stadium. You can't go live inside any venue at the Olympics, so we were just outside, but a great spectacle. We could see into the stadium. It's an open-air stadium, and we could see some of the festivities. Pretty cool. And certainly the fireworks that everybody could see overhead on the telecast were really impressive.
They really were. Now, I had to take a nap last night, so I just watched about half an hour or so of it. But I got to see the fireworks at the end of the Parade of Nations, and they looked amazing. And they even had the fireworks spell out welcome, which I thought was so cool that they did that. I read a headline in USA Today that there was supposed to be a drone light show that got scrapped because of technical difficulties. Do you know what happened there?
I don't. We heard that. There was some stuff that was going on in the air, and we saw some drones up, but apparently there was supposed to be something that was going to be fairly impressive. But again, it was super windy last night. I don't know if that had anything necessarily to do with the technical issues, but the opening ceremony is down to a science. I mean, these guys plan this out by the second, and there's not really a whole lot of a margin for error. So if anything looks like it's going to be scrapped, they probably, you know, have a good idea of what they're going to do as a plan B and, you know, what's going to happen if they can't. So it didn't, you know, seem to us that anything was amiss, but we had heard that there was something else that had been planned initially that didn't come off as they maybe perhaps initially planned.
We're speaking with Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City. He is live in Pyeongchang watching the Winter Olympics and attending the events and reporting on it for his station back there in Utah. How cold was it at the opening ceremony? You said it started around 8 o'clock local time. We know it's a cold winter there. How bad was it when the game, when that show started, and how tough was that to be outdoors for everybody?
Oh, it was chilly, man, because, you know, the morning shows are 2.5 hours long, and boy, it was quite cold. Actually, it warmed up yesterday, so it wasn't as bitter as it had been. We got up to 40 degrees yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And so it wasn't terrible, but again, that wind really causes some problems. I would say probably around opening ceremony time, probably in the neighborhood of 25, 27 degrees.
That could be worse,
right? Yeah. Pretty stiff breeze. Yeah. The first couple days we were here, though, man, it was absolutely bone chilling, single digits in the early morning and late night, and then maybe a high of 15 to 20 in the middle of the afternoon, and just that wind just takes it right out of you.
So from everything I've seen on the NBC coverage so far, it looks like and I haven't gotten to see a ton yet because, like I said, I didn't nap last night, but it looks beautiful. It looks like everything looks really cool. How well prepared were they? Is everything, you know, we remember Sochi and the brown water running through the faucets and things like that. Does Korea have it, you know, really well together for the start of this?
Yeah, seemingly an altogether different story than we saw even in Rio in 2016, which I was there, and there were a number of problems with venues that weren't completed, just differing infrastructure problems with transportation within that city. This is altogether different. The venues look great. Everything's completed. There aren't like construction crews milling around trying to put stuff together at the last minute. Everything seems to be running fairly fluid, and it's efficient. You know, the bus system is pretty efficient. But I will say, too, I mean, you're talking about the difference between in Rio, a huge mega city, and an area here in South Korea that's relatively small by population. So that could help. I wasn't in Sochi, but of course, yeah, everybody heard about the problems there. Doesn't seem to be having any sort of major issues, albeit, you know, just here a day or so into the games just yet.
The last time South Korea had the Olympics was 88, and they were in Seoul, which I'm assuming is a much larger metropolitan city. Pyeongchang, I know nothing about it, but it seems like a smaller area. How is the infrastructure there? Is everything, do you believe, you know, does it seem like, well, everything was built up for these games? Sochi was nothing until they built from what I remember, until they built the Olympics around that town. Pyeongchang, is it a big town? Is it a small city that they just put Olympics in? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a fairly small town, like you would see maybe a suburb of Chicago or something like that. It's not huge. There's not like a big skyline or anything. I would say there's just a couple of taller buildings in the sort of downtown area. But what's interesting is there are sort of two venue clusters, like in Sochi, where there's the mountain cluster and the coastal cluster. And the coastal venues are down in actually a separate town called Gangyang, which is a fairly large city on the eastern coast of South Korea. And that's where the media village is, where everybody's staying, where things like hockey and figure skating, curling, all of those sort of indoor arena sports are taking place. So it's kind of actually taking place in two cities. But Pyeongchang is relatively small. I would say not much bigger than 50,000, 75,000, maybe 100,000 people grand total. This is a pretty nice area as far as the city goes. It's beautiful, well kept, very clean. It's certainly a city, but this is a little different than also Rio and Sochi in that these venues are anticipated anyway to stay long after the games. Many of the venues that were built in Sochi were torn down immediately after. Same thing in Rio, or they were in incredible disrepair right after the games. This seems to have a little bit better infrastructure surrounding the actual venues to where they will actually be used following the games.
And so you're staying, how far away, how far from Pyeongchang is the other village where games are going on?
25 miles, maybe 20 miles, something like that.
So not that bad. So is transportation easy back and forth?
Yeah, fairly. There's at every Olympics, there's a really intense, if anyone's ever been to an Olympics, maybe 96 in Chicago or in Atlanta.
Oh, don't taunt us. Don't taunt us with the Olympics we didn't get. The 2016 Olympics would have been in Chicago.
Right, yeah. Well, you guys pulled out or just didn't get it ahead of Rio.
We got dropped out in the first vote. And then, it came to light that that I believe there were some dirty politics involved, which you'd think Chicago would figure out how to play well with. You'd think that,
Chicago,
if there's dirty politics,
that, right?
We should have won that. That's a big failure on our part.
Transportation's pretty good. It's a smaller city, but there is a fairly, and this is purely from a media perspective now. I mean, there are spectators. It's probably an entirely different story. But there is an intense bus system that goes from venue to venue, from cluster to cluster, from hotel and media village to the International Broadcast Center. It's pretty dialed in, and it seems like it's the same as it was in Rio, but the problem in Rio is just the infrastructure, the road system, the sheer magnitude of people that caused so much of a problem for the transportation. Here, that has not been the case. It's been pretty punctual and fairly reliable so far. We've been here almost a week now, so it seems like we're getting a handle on everything, and they certainly do too.
What's been the biggest adjustment being in Korea now for a week? As an American coming to Korea, what do you say, like, wow, this is different?
The temperatures were definitely sort of a shock. We've had a really warm winter in Utah, and I mean, I think it was like 60 degrees today in Utah, and sunny and beautiful, and people are out playing golf, and it's like spring weather almost. And here, it has been fairly unrelenting with the cold. That was the first impression, was just how cold and windy it was. Of course, folks in Chicago know a lot about wind, of course, but that was pretty big shock. Secondly, is just how nice the people are. I mean, they are incredibly welcoming as a people. I mean, it's just great. Not to say that they weren't in Rio, but just incredibly hospitable, very nice. The South Koreans love Americans. They love the Olympics. They're very excited. And for all that's been made with, North and South Korea and all the relations and stuff, it has seemingly not dampened their enthusiasm at all.
Is the language barrier difficult? Do many people in South Korea speak English?
Yeah, fair amount. Most of the volunteers do, which is great because that'll help us get around to different places. If we were just sort of out on our own, showed up, flew into Seoul and had to get here on our own without any sort of assistance, it would definitely be a language barrier for sure. They're so nice and hospitable. It's just been kind of great because they're very helpful. And it's like, well, if they can tell that there's a language barrier, they'll find somebody who speaks English to help us get where we need to go. So that's been really nice. But most of the volunteers who are South Korean do speak English. So that has been helpful in pointing us in the right direction, too.
Excellent. So you mentioned the relationship with North Korea. I wonder how much is being made of it there, because here in the U.S., where we just played the video of the opening games, there was a lot of talk. So the South Korean president shook the hand of Kim Jong-un's sister, who was attending and was there in the box with everybody. Mike Pence was sitting, I believe, a row in front and two people over from her. And I had read he avoided shaking her hand. What is being made of those relations over there?
It's definitely a topic of conversation. I would not say it dominates the day. There is very much an awareness as far as the media goes of what's going on with those two countries. It hasn't risen to the level here of being, the big story, you might say. Even though last night, during the opening ceremony, it was very noticeable, you might say, that there was something going on between North and South Korea, that the sister had been here, the first time a member of Kim Jong-un's family had been to South Korea, the interesting geopolitical side with Mike Pence being here. It was interesting. That was the first time we had seen anything or had an observation, you might say, that there was something going on bigger than the games. That being said, back to today, it was seemingly back to normal and competition underway on the Saturday here, of course, on your Friday. It didn't seem to be a massive issue. Of course, I think the bigger indication of what transpires here will come after in the weeks leading up to it. The breaking news that we just saw about an hour or two ago was that Kim Jong-un had invited the South Korean president, Moon Jae-in, to North Korea for a meeting after the Olympics. And, you know, that's pretty big news for an area that doesn't have a lot of conversation. And we actually got to go on a tour of the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, last week. And, you know, it's a very contentious space, that 2.5 mile wide strip of land between North and South Korea, where there are soldiers facing each other, soldiers on one side from South Korea facing the soldiers from North Korea, pretty intense stuff. And so that is seemingly maybe a nice aspect that there could be a break in the tension a little bit. I mean, who knows? I mean, this is 50, 60 years in the making, but we heard coming into this that with South Korea, you know, people were asking a lot of Americans, well, what about the games and the tensions there? Are you worried about going over there? But the South Koreans have dealt with this level of tension for 60 plus years. Yeah. And so in a way, they're sort of used to it, which is kind of odd to say, but maybe a little bit of break in that tension. Who knows?
It's going to be interesting to follow that as well as the game. So last question, is there a game you're looking forward to? What are you attending in the next couple of days that you're really excited about?
Well, we actually just talked about hoping to get to the USA-Canada gold medal women's hockey game, if that makes it to that point. That's always a great game if they both make it to the gold medal game. Women's hockey, it's so interesting. They know each other so well. That'll be a big one to watch. And then for us in Utah, a lot of our alpine, our skiers, that'll be great. I think we've got and then figure skating, of course. Nathan Chin, he's from Salt Lake City, favored to medal with all the quadruple jumps. We'll be watching him for sure next week as he goes into the individual competition.
Yeah, he had trouble in the team competition in the short program. Yeah. We watched that here on Thursday night, and we're so sad. It's so hard to watch these skaters fall, and, you know, he's doing something nobody's ever done before in the Olympics, so it's so exciting, so we're hoping for the best for him. Andrew, hold on for a second. Talk to Jess. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate the update.
All right, man. We'll see you soon.